Stack receivers, two to the right. Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Pass. Wilson, quick throw. And it's intercepted!
Patriot Nation podcast presented by SB Nation. We are the voice of Patriot Nation. I am Pat Lane. With me, as always, is Ryan Spagnoli. Spags, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Probably a lot better than you after that crapshoot down in Nashville that you had to witness. But looked like you had a good weekend from our interactions. You had some fun. So that's always a plus getting with the guys and stuff. So I'm happy you made it down there. Definitely on my bucket list for sure.
Yeah, it was fun. It's a good time. I'll tell you what, man. I had some solid barbecue down there, and I was telling people, I'm like, I had a great weekend except for 3 hours on Sunday. Beyond that, it was great. So
that's awesome. There you go.
So it was good. We had a good time. So just we are going to get into. We have a good episode today. We got Chad Finn coming on the show. He's a sports media columnist for Boston Globe. So we got to talk a few different things about him. I did want to just give a quick programming note to you guys listening. We're going to be dropping our podcast every Friday. So this obviously came out on a Friday. So you can expect our show every Friday. So that'll come out, every week on Friday. So just so you know, we got a hell of a show coming up next week too. So a little day after Thanksgiving Day, you'd be recovering. Wake up from your food coma,
Should we announce it, Pat? Should we tell them who's coming on, or are we going to keep it a little secret?
All right.
I gotcha.
You'll be interested to see who it is. It'll be, take a look on Twitter at some point this week, and you'll be like, oh, okay. So it's gonna be interesting. So that should be a lot of fun. But as I said, we have a great show today, and we have an interview with Chad Finn. So let's get right into that interview. All right, so we're going to welcome onto the show Chad Finn. He is a media journalist for the Boston Globe. And welcome on, Chad.
Thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anytime.
Thanks for joining us. So, you cover all sports, and including the media as well. And obviously, we're a Patriots podcast. That game was just so terrible that we don't even want to talk to you about it because it was just so bad. There's just nothing to talk about, nothing to break down.
Right into the bye week.
But we're just going to move on. Just that's it, pretend like it never happened and try to wash it away over the bye week. But interestingly enough, and good for us, luckily for us, you wrote a really interesting article this week. And so I figure we'll talk about that instead. And so you wrote an article with a question about the rival from another team that you'd like to have on your team the most. So if you kind of set up the question and kind of some ideas, and we'll kind of bounce some ideas back and forth.
Sure, yeah. One of my jobs for the Globe and for Boston.com, this is specific to Boston.com, is to do a question of the day. Usually comes from a reader or, somebody on Twitter or something like that. This one actually came from Twitter. And it's a question I like because you get so many different reactions from people across not just the Patriots, but across all Boston sports. And so, you'd see people saying Derek Jeter, which is absolutely ridiculous. He's someone Red Sox fans should always hate. You should see Mariano Rivera, who is about as gracious as it got in terms of being an opponent and all class. And, some Canadians guys for the Bruins fans. Magic Johnson popped up a lot from the Celtics fans. But the Patriots angle of it is really interesting because it was the Patriots' rival. I don't know if this has gone on. This level of unprecedented success with this franchise has gone on so long. They've kind of come and gone through rivalries. The other end of it hasn't been able to keep up the bargain. So it's kind of interesting to hear from the Patriots fans who can not only who they would love to have on their roster, but who they actually considered a rival. So I was curious what you guys thought in terms of who that player would be and what roster you'd pluck it from.
Yeah,
go ahead,
well,
Pat. Yeah, Pat, you go first.
First thing for me, you know, if we're going any sport, I think the easiest question, the easiest answer is Magic. And it's a no doubt, absolute no brainer. Because number one, he was one of the best players to ever play. But number two, he was the best player on your rival, the team that beat you in the championship twice. So it's like, well, you automatically win four championships if he's on your team as opposed to not on your team. And so it's like, you know, you win four right there anyways because you're going to win two more because he wasn't there to beat you.
Yeah.
And then they'd win every year. I mean, it would have been like the 60s Celtics if Magic and Bird and McHale and Parrish were playing together. It would have been ridiculous. So,
way he played fits with anybody in basketball history, too, you know, the unselfishness and the passing. I think we all would have loved to see Magic and Bird on the same team in an all-star game or something like that, just to see how they would play off each other. So, yeah, that's the ultimate one to me, too, across at least all Boston sports.
Right.
For me, I'd have to go, I'll do the same as you, Pat, you know, a Boston sports. I guess I'll stick to basketball. As much as I don't like his antics on the court, I'd have to say LeBron James. I'm not a fan of his. I just think he's an unbelievable basketball player. I mean, love him or hate him, he's arguably the greatest player of all time. You know, I obviously wasn't alive for the Jordan era, at least for my generation, LeBron. I mean, and you see how dominant he is. He's taken crappy team after crappy team to the finals, won a championship. Right. I know he had Kyrie, but you know what I'm saying? He's just been so dominant by himself. It's such a superstar-driven league, too. So I'd have to say LeBron. And for the Patriots, I mean, I guess you can call them our rivals just because sour taste from the two Super Bowl losses, but I'd have to go with Odell. I think he can be a clown sometimes off the field, you know, the dancing and stuff. I don't know how much that would go on if he was here, but we talked about it off air. He shows up on game day and plays and puts up pretty good numbers for a washed up quarterback, Eli Manning, who somehow can't fit a ball into a 10-foot radius right now. So I think his talent's getting drained over there. I would love for him to be a Patriot, maybe someday, who knows?
Yeah, that's a great one. I know how dynamic he is, and like you said, he does show up on Sundays and puts up the numbers for whatever, you know, ridiculousness and marrying the goalpost or marrying the kicking net or whatever the heck that was back then. But I'm curious how he would work with Brady in terms of being a route runner and that sort of thing. But as we've seen with Brady and Josh Gordon, when you have a supremely talented receiver, Brady's going to try to give him the ball, even if he isn't necessarily in the right spot all the time or still learning the playbook. So, yeah, Odell would be a pretty dynamic one. Defensively, I feel like if Bill Belichick were making this choice, it would be a defensive guy. And I don't know how you take one from a rival. You know, the Ravens are kind of a rival for a while, but there's no way I would want Ray Lewis. Just feel like a total phony to me. Probably Ed Reed would be Belichick's first choice through history. But right now, I think you'd have to say maybe like Aaron Donald. You call the Rams a rival because you played them in the Super Bowl once. You know, you stretch it to that degree and you take a defensive player like that. Some people who responded to me said Von Miller. He's a little bit too much of a kind of look at me type of guy, as great as he is for me to want him. But I feel like it would be a defensive player. I just don't know who that is right now at this point in time.
Yeah, well, that's a tough situation because you're right. Like, who is it that you would kind of go after? Now, one guy you want to say defensive player on arrival, maybe Jamal Adams. Plays safety for the Jets right now.
That's a good
if you're
one.
Talking about current, you know, he's a solid player. And again, he plays for one of their rivals. I think it's funny. So Spags mentioned LeBron, and it's almost like LeBron is a rival with Boston teams, right? So it's not like we don't even have like a rival team. We have like a rival player, right? And that was the same way with Manning for a long time, you know, with the Patriots, where it was like, we were a rival with the Colts because Manning was there. Well, now Manning's gone. It's like the Colts aren't a rival anymore. It's like, man, they're the Colts, you know? And then Manning went to Denver, and all of a sudden we were rivals with Denver because he's in Denver. So it was, you know, so that's kind of an interesting spot there. I always thought, I feel like for me, you'd have to look probably towards the Steelers because the Steelers, I think, would be the biggest rival for the Patriots outside of the AFC East. I think defensively, like you said, I mean, I think Polamalu is a guy that you know, played such an interesting style of play and could do so many different things well and was such a good tackler and was such a smart football player that I think, you know, Belichick would have loved to have him in the system. And I think him and Ed Reed are kind of falling into that same category where you're like, you know, what Belichick would have done with that guy, you know, in the back of his defense. It would have been a lot of fun to watch. So, you know, defensively, I'd say, yeah, maybe, you know, it's got to be a safety there. I mean, you know, the linebackers are great, but like, you know, I think a safety is really kind of where he'd be looking. So,
yeah,
you know, I'd say one of those guys.
You know, who's an interesting one. It's not current times, but I think they kind of qualify as a rival, even though it's the old, you know, hammer and nail cliche. And he ended up playing here is Darrell Revis, taking him in his heyday as right. a lockdown corner. Somebody, you know, is pretty good at matching up with Randy Moss. Moss got him famously once where Revis came up limping with the hamstring injury. But was a tremendous player hamstring. For a long time. Yeah, that he might be one. I, you know, maybe there's a Pittsburgh linebacker or somebody like that through the last few years. But, you know, like we were saying, they've gone through so many rivals. I mean, just look at the Super Bowls, the Falcons and the Seahawks and, you know, losing to Philadelphia this last time around. It feels like there have been three or four different cycles of coaches and quarterbacks for every team in the league while this dynasty has lasted for the Patriots. And so it's really tough for them to say they have one specific rival. You know, one guy, though, still in the league but not where he used to be, who came up a lot of times in this is Richard Sherman. I think Patriots fans really grew to respect him through the years, even though, you know, he did the "you mad bro" thing the first time they dealt with the Seahawks. And, you know, he was gloating in the Super Bowl right up until the moment he wasn't. I think Sherman at his peak was somebody that really appealed to Patriots fans because, yeah, he was outspoken and brash, but he was also a really bright and talented player.
Yeah, I do like his swagger a lot. I mean, he's definitely a guy
that backed it up.
He did. He absolutely did. And that's I think, the biggest thing is that, you know, you can talk all you want, but at the end of the day, if you can't back it up with your play, then forget about it. You know, the safety from Pittsburgh, I don't think it was Ryan Clark. Safety from Pittsburgh that was talking junk to Brady, and Brady throws five touchdowns over his head. You know, it's like
Anthony Smith,
right. Freddie Mitchell, who's talking trash before the Super Bowl, and they shut him down. It's like, you know, it's just if you can back it up, then people respect you. If you can't, then people are like, this guy's a clown. So I think that's, you know, Sherman's a good one too. Again, it's like it's the rival situation. I mean, Colin Coward, you know, you're talking about how long it's lasted. Colin Coward was saying LaDainian Tomlinson was drafted in 2001. The year the Patriots right. won the Super Bowl. He right. played a Hall of Fame career. He retired. He waited the 5 years until he got into the Hall of Fame. He was elected into the Hall of Fame, and the Patriots are still on the same run. And it's like, it's unbelievable to think that it's been going on for that long. And it's really kind of, you know, it's really amazing. And I'd say the one thing more amazing than that is the Vinatieri thing. I just think Adam Vinatieri, to me, is that guy that I'm just like, oh my God, like Vinatieri is just, he's unreal. He's timeless. And he's still the one of the best kickers in the league. And I don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
But I mean, geez, he was drafted in 96 for God's sakes. And he's still going 22 years later. And it's just like, it's, you know, and he hasn't, I mean, he's not kicking off and he hasn't been kicking off for a long time, but he's still got it. I mean, he's still hitting 50 yard field goals. It's like, it's crazy.
Yeah. No, it's phenomenal, too. It's so strange that he's been with the Colts longer than he was with the Patriots because, you know, with the Pats, I mean, he hit, what, three of the – well, put it this way. His second Super Bowl-winning kick, the one that beat the Panthers, is probably the fourth biggest kick of his career, you know, after the two in the Snow Bowl and the one that won the Rams Super Bowl. And then those kicks are probably three of the biggest four in NFL history, three of the biggest five. You know, he had – Jim O'Brien winning the Super Bowl for the Colts over the Cowboys that year. But, you know, nothing really has come close to the magnitude of the ones Adam made. And you know, remember him tackling Herschel Walker. It feels like Herschel Walker played 50 years ago. So he better get into the Hall of Fame immediately. They can't mess around. I know how reluctant they've been to put kickers in, but Adam should be a no-doubter without any debate.
Well, I mean, that's – and like you – and you touched on it perfectly. I mean – he's the first bad Hall of Famer, in my opinion. And you look at it and just say, okay, He's got all the records. He's played for as many years as everyone else. He's got all the records. He's the number one points, blah, 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 all this other stuff. But, like, the snowball kick is the greatest kick in the history of the NFL, and it's not close. Nothing even comes close to that kick.
The tying
It's the
one?
Greatest kick I've ever seen. Where he tied it. It was just I was at that game, and I was sitting in the opposite end zone. So I've had season tickets since like 2000, as a matter of fact. It was when I got my ticket. My dad's had tickets since 67. But anyways, so I was there, but I was in the opposite end zone. So I was in the game winning end zone, but I couldn't see it. He kicked it and it looked low, and I was like, oh no. But I never saw it. It was that snowy out. And I just looked down and saw the refs, like, I'll never forget. And I was still, to this day, I still say, like, the refs looked at each other like, holy crap, he hit that? And then put their hands up. And, you know, it was just one of those things. They shared that moment, like, wow, that just happened. Huh? And it was just, it was the biggest kick. It's the best kick I've ever seen. And it's not close. And again, he does it again in the Super Bowl. And then he, you know, wins the game in overtime against the Raiders, and then kicks a game winner against Carolina in Super Bowl. And you're just like, it's just again and again and again. And then even the Colts, was it the divisional game that year in 06 where they kicked, like, the final score was like 15-7 or something like that. And he kicked 5 field goals and they won the game with field goals. And so it's like, you know, they won because of him. Like, that's what happens. Like, he goes to a team and they win a championship. I mean, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, smartest thing he ever did too is go indoors. You know, getting out of Foxborough and getting to the controlled environment 8 games a year there with the Colts, and going with a great team right away too. So he still had more opportunities to hit memorable kicks. But Adam is an all timer by any measure, and hopefully he keeps going here for a couple more years. I love seeing a guy who's just a couple of years younger than me out there still. Still banging around because I look a lot older than he does.
Chad, not to get off topic, segue into a little Patriots talk here. It kind of an interesting thing I kind of noticed in the weeks past. The offense is not up to scheme. It's slow. They're not moving the ball as quickly as they'd like to, as they have in the past. And I think part of that is no Gronk. But, you know, an interesting thing is Brady and Bill used to meet, I believe, Tuesdays or Monday nights and kind of go over the playbook and their game plan for the week. And I could imagine, I'd wonder if they're even doing that anymore. After the offseason and kind of what spiraled last year, which was so uncharacteristic as we've seen, there's got to be some tension there. And I think it's kind of, you know, showing a little bit on the field. I'd like to get your guys' take on that, because I think it is. I mean, I'll let you guys go, and then I'll kind of get my take off yours.
Yeah, and, you know, it could be. I tend to think this would be a much bigger issue if Josh McDaniels had taken the Colts job, though. Having Josh here is kind of the, and has been for a while, is the, you know, the go-between between Bill and Tom. Whatever Tom and Bill's relationship is, and certainly the goal is still the same for both of them, to win Super Bowls and to enhance their own legacies, even though they would never say that. They know both know their place in history. If their personal relationship has fractures or cracks in it, that's not going to stop them from striving as much as they can to win this thing, to win a 6-1. But Josh is there as sort of the middleman, as the guy who Brady's always bounced stuff off, who works closest with Brady, who thinks like Brady, devises a game plan, all those things. So I think it was probably a little bit underrated, the fact that they kept Josh and he stuck around. And, you know, that's the full story we don't really know, is how that all came about, and how much influence Bill had on that compared to how much influence Brady and the Crafts had on that. But it's ultimately a good thing for this team. I think the real issue with the offense is, they've kind of they have a ton of talent, but they've kind of had to piece it together from week to week. You know, Gronk hasn't been out there the last few weeks. Michelle had to deal with his knee injury. Edelman was working his way back from playing for the first time in a year and then coming off the suspension. Josh Gordon comes in 7 games ago and tries to acclimate himself. You know, Chris Hogan's trying to figure out what his role is. And so it seems like it's a slightly altered task that they take out there every week. And I think the ultimate goal here, and probably why you've seen Gronk get a few games off, other than that he's pretty beat up, is that they want to have this thing running at all cylinders as they get in December and January. And having Josh Gordon as acclimated as possible and Gronk as healthy as possible. And obviously keeping James White upright is as important as he is. And, you know, making sure Brady starts spreading the ball around a little bit more, those sorts of things. So I think it's still, there's still a lot of reason for encouragement, even though this past game was as frustrating as it can get during the regular season. And, you know, Brady being 41 years old, anytime he has a mediocre game, there's going to be questions about whether he's slipping. But I think if you look a little bit ahead, look at the big picture, you see Brady and Belichick on the same page in terms of what the team goal is during the season. And you see the cast that Brady has around him and say, you know what, if they keep all these guys on the field, they're going to be pretty good when they need to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. And realistically, here's the thing for me, right? Belichick's got – he's got to run the whole team, right? And the whole team's got to buy in. And the big thing about the Patriots is that they play, you know, unselfishly. They play as if, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, who gets the glory. It's that they win the championship and that's good enough. You know, and so I think that you have to sacrifice some of your individuality to do that. And, you know, is Brady getting fed up with that? And, of course, we don't know the answer to that, right? And maybe Brady says, you know, I'm the best player ever and I can, you know, do this without buying into the Patriot way. And maybe he can. But the problem is that I think Belichick looks at it and says, you know, I have the rest of the team that needs to buy in. And if the quarterback isn't 100% bought in, then the rest of the team doesn't 100% buy in, because that's the best player on the team and that's the best player ever. And if he's not buying into the system anymore, now why should anybody else buy into the system? And so I think that that's the biggest issue that I would see. And for Belichick, I think he looks at it and says, okay, Brady's getting up there in age. He has to stay committed to what we're doing here. And so that's going to sometimes mean going after him. And maybe Brady doesn't want him to do that. But, like, that's the way it is. You know, you have to buy in and you have to show the rest of the team that, you know, you care as much as everybody else and that you're just another cog in the machine. You know, and so I think that, you know, if Brady's not doing that, well, that certainly could be a sign of something, you know, bad coming. But there's been real no indication that he isn't doing that. You know, I think it seems like Brady and Bill seem to get along pretty well still. I mean, obviously, look, I mean, I've been married 10 years and I've never been in a relationship longer than 10 years. I guess I've been with my wife 14 years, but I mean, like, I don't know obviously my family, but that doesn't count. Like, beyond that, like, I've never experienced something like this. So it's like, you know, from these guys, yeah, they've gone 18 years. They've been together and Belichick's still trying to run the same system. And Brady's still doing the same thing. So, of course, there's going to be strains here and there. But the question is, will there be full buy-in? And I think there still is from Brady, at least publicly to the team. Now, maybe privately he goes home and he's like, God, like, man, I can't stand that guy. Or why do I have to keep doing this? But, like, then he gets out in public and he gets in with his teammates and he does everything he needs to do because he understands in order to win in this system, he needs to buy in. And like you said, Brady wants to win. Belichick wants to win, and Brady knows that the Belichick way is the only way they're going to win, because if Belichick loses the locker room, then they lose. It's just, they'll, no matter how talented their team is, you know, it's just they have no shot. And so, you know, I think both of them will kind of have come to that realization to say, you know, we both need to buy in no matter what. And, you know, they said there were tension and friction last year, and last year they made it to the Super Bowl and they, you know, almost won the Super Bowl. I mean, they were, right, you know, a Brandon Graham strip sack away from winning the Super Bowl. And so it's like, you know, even though there was supposedly tension last year, which there was, apparently, it's what it sounded like, you know, from people that were on the inside, it's, you know, it sounds like there was some tension here and there, but like, that's natural. And I think that's going to happen. And so like, it is what it is. I mean, you look at, and the other thing too, look at the Warriors, look what happened just last night. Now this episode's coming out on Friday. So, you know, this is what, Tuesday night, or I don't even know, Monday or Tuesday night, where, you know, Draymond Green comes off and they're screaming at each other and they're yelling at each other back and forth in the locker room. And he's saying, you know, you're not going to stay here because your contract and blah, blah, and all this stuff. And they've been together 2 years. These guys have been together 18 years and it's never come out publicly. There's been anything until last year. And even then it was like rumors, you know? And so it's like, you know, for nothing to have leaked And for things to be this good for 18 years, it just seems like they're not just going to disintegrate the relationship and say, all right, we're done here. You know, I don't know. I don't buy that.
Well, I think the genesis of it is that Belichick's practical about how Brady's career is going to end. And Brady isn't, because it's him. It's he wants to be the quarterback forever. And so this stuff, which was, you know, reported really well by some guys, especially Tom Curran locally, about what was really going on and the issues that they had with, you know, his Brady's successor was here, Jimmy Garoppolo. And practically, Belichick looked at it and said, I have a 40-year-old quarterback. How long is this going to last? And to Brady's credit, over the last 3 or 4 years, I think he outlasted Belichick's projection for how long he would be good.
100%. And I think, too, I mean, a lot of stuff's happened behind closed doors that we don't know about. But I think, you know, I think Bill tried to trade him last year. They probably called for Garoppolo, and he said no, and called back and said, what about Brady? And they said, what are you crazy? You know, and maybe there was some discussion. Maybe it didn't even get that far. But I'm sure it came up, and, you know, Tom probably heard about it and felt pissed off. And, I mean, in a situation like this, I always say there's no one really that's wrong here. You know, Tom's not wrong for getting pissed at Bill for trying to trade him after what he's done for the organization for this long and how good they've been together. Bill wouldn't be wrong for trying to get younger, and, you know, Tom's got a limited amount of time left than Jimmy did. And Robert's not wrong for saying, hey, what the hell? Like, that's basically right. My son. I this kid has made me who I am. You know, like, it's a weird situation. And I always say I'm looking forward to, I hope they do like a 30 for 30 or some kind of documentary about when this whole thing's all done, the dynasty, about like everything that went into it and, you know, kind of the stuff that happened behind closed doors, that whole Patriot way. I mean, unless they kind of implement it into the next dynasty, what you want to call it. But I think it'd be really interesting.
Well, your best hope is that Belichick writes an autobiography and tells the whole truth. And
right.
I don't know if that happens in terms of him revealing why Malcolm Butler didn't play in the Super Bowl or specifics along those lines. But, maybe it does come from the Brady angle. I mean, Brady's father said years ago that it will end badly. It always ends badly. And you look around sports, you know, Kobe and Shaq broke up. We see, as Pat mentioned, what's happening with the Warriors nowadays. It's, these runs like this between three massively successful men with same goals, but also some different goals in terms of what they want for the franchise or different roles anyway. It's unprecedented, and it's the kind of thing that's not supposed to happen. Ultimately, I think it's a tribute to all three guys that it has lasted this long, and you can understand why it would break up now, just why there would be frustrations at this point in time. But I don't think it means it's going to break up anytime soon, unless Tom really starts to slip. And they're still, for whatever issues they've had in the past year that were real, they're still in a place that most other teams in the NFL would absolutely envy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And well, one interesting thing to think about when they're talking about trading Brady, and not that he was on the same level, okay, but after they won the Super Bowl, the Patriots traded Drew Bledsoe to a rival, okay, to a rival in the division.
Yeah.
And they got a first-round pick back for him. But they traded him to a team in the division, which is crazy. Oh. And you know, now, look, anyone that's been a fan since 01 doesn't understand. They don't get it, okay? But someone that's older, that's grew up in New England, like you and me, Chad, we understand. Like, we look at it and say, in my eyes, Drew Bledsoe is one of the three people that saved this franchise, because this franchise was moving to St. Louis. They were gone. You know, when Kraft stepped in, and, you know, bought the stadium, and they hired Parcells in 93, and so interest was there, and they draft Bledsoe number one, and he's a dynamic player that the region instantly fell in love with. And those three guys saved this franchise. And so, you know, now this is 8 years later, or 9 years later, they trade him to the Bills, but he had just signed a 10-year, $100 million contract. He was the quarterback of the future. And for the foreseeable future, there was no one on the horizon that was coming to take his job. And all of a sudden he gets hurt and Brady steps in. Now, Brady's the best player of all time. Obviously, we can see that. He wasn't in 2002. He was a game manager in 2001 for the most part, who made some unbelievable plays in the Super Bowl and drove them down and, you know, had a lot of mental toughness and all this other stuff. But, like, realistically, he wasn't the face of the franchise in 01, right? The defense was. And so then turn around and trade your, you know, your franchise quarterback. It was almost like a shock to a lot of people that they did that. And now here they are in this. And again, it's not the same situation with Brady, but they draft Jimmy G. You think Jimmy G is going to be the guy. And Brady was just too good for them to trade him. I mean, I think that was the goal was, okay, the end of his contract is going to come and we're going to trade him away. And he was just too good. You couldn't justify trading Brady. So you had to trade Jimmy G. But like, I think they should do it again. I think they should draft another quarterback in the second or third round and have that guy be the successor. And then if you look at it and say, all right, well, it doesn't work out, then fine. You trade that guy instead. But like,
I'm all for Will Greer coming here. Will Greer.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's easier said than done, though. I mean, you look at the guys they drafted through the years, Rohan Davey, you know, Kevin O'Connell, guys like who weren't high draft picks like Matt Castle, probably had the best career out of any of the guys they brought in. Hoyer was a free undrafted free agent. It's tough to find that guy, and they found him.
Right.
And the miracle was the Brady outlasted him. And I don't know if it's so easy to go out and find a guy who's got the profile of Jimmy G again in the second or third round, but kind of what they have to do at this point. A lot of people thought they might take Lamar Jackson at the end of the first round this year. They passed him up. A lot of people thought they liked Baker Mayfield and were trying to move up to get him, and you can see why they might have wanted to do that without his career started. But, boy, it's tough to identify who that guy is going to be. You got to be probably more lucky than good to find a quarterback beyond, you know, that top pick in the draft. It's funny, you're talking about that 2001 season with Ian Tomlinson. You know, Drew Brees was their second round pick that year, the Chargers second round pick. They had the number one and traded what would have been Michael Vick to the Falcons and ended up with Tomlinson and Brees. So that has to rate as one of the best drafts in history. But finding another quarterback now for the Patriots, you know, Kyle O'Leary was another one they thought might end up here this year. And, you know, he seems to be maybe not the best character guy the way his career started with the Giants. So, yeah. You know, maybe it's somebody like Will Greer. Who knows? Maybe they see somebody who's a junior or sophomore this year that they really like down the road. But what's obvious is they've got to find that guy pretty soon because he's not on the roster at the moment. And the starter is, 10 years beyond where a lot of quarterbacks start to lose their ability.
Right. No, it's true. And so he really is, you know, it's never happened before. It just hasn't happened before. And I think, so I wrote an article about this last in the summer, and I think at 41, Warren Moon was the MVP of the Pro Bowl at age 41. And he was good. He had a solid year.
Yeah. It was like 25 touchdowns or something.
Right. And then at 42, he was junk. And so nobody's ever done it at 42. Someone, you know, one or two guys have done it at 41. Nobody's ever done it at 42. So next year is going to be unprecedented for him to even be like a respectable starting quarterback. Never mind one of the top five guys in the NFL. So, so we'll see. I mean, if anyone could do it, it's him. But like, it's just he is, you know, he's going against Father Time right now. So, so we'll see. Rob Parker eventually might claim victory eventually 15 years later, but. You know, so, but anyways, I think that's all we got, Chad. I mean, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chad. I really appreciate it. Taking the time out of your day to join our show. Still early on in it and one of our top guests so far. So once again, thank you so much and big fan of your work.
No, I appreciate it. Glad to do it. It was fun. And give me a shout anytime. Glad to talk to you guys.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Listen, before we let you go, why don't you just tell the people that are listening where they can interact with you, where they can read your stuff and so on.
BostonGlobe.com online. We're always happy to have more subscribers there. And my work also is on Boston.com, which is the free site. So I write about the Patriots a couple times a week, write about whatever's going on in Boston sports, and I write a sports media column on Fridays. So I'm out there almost every day. So I appreciate anybody who wants to check that stuff out.
Yeah, there's some interesting news which you already dropped on Twitter. Obviously, this is now we're recording just a little peek behind the curtain here. It's coming out Friday, but we're recording Wednesday night. You know, you dropped the Minahan news, and so I assume that column's coming out today on Friday, right?
That column is already out and posted. That's right. I got that baby out before they could announce it. So beat them to the
punch. Wow, good for you! Look at that, a little breaking news there. So. That's great. So that's going to be – that's obviously an interesting one to follow. And anyone's looking for more information on that, you know, definitely you should be following Chad. And it's fascinating situation what happened over there. So – but you're on top of it. So
– never a dull moment.
No, certainly is not. Certainly is not. It's probably a good thing. I mean, good job security. So, all right. Well, thanks, Chad. I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks. Take care.
All right, big thanks to Chad Finn for coming on. That was a really cool interview. Had a lot of fun with that. You know, two kind of interesting questions there, you know, about the rival question. That one's kind of been one that's an interesting one for me, and I thought he brought it up, and I'm like, oh, this is perfect. We can avoid talking about the terrible Patriots game and talk about a really interesting subject. And obviously, you know, you had the Brady-Belichick friction stuff that I thought, you know, is relevant again all of a sudden. You know, and I think you're right to kind of question what's going on over there. So certainly an interesting question to look at, you know.
Definitely. That was a good interview.
Yeah.
Always, you know, bye week, shitty game, kind of much better than I thought it would go, put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. So he's a good follow. And again, you know, read his stuff. He had an especially good one in Boston Magazine. Comes with the Globe. Had a little, you know, a little quote from me in it, no big deal. But it was cool. It was all about kind of getting set up for the Patriots games and, you know, what you should do to get there and what you should tailgate and what you should bring. And so it was interesting. He covers all the bases. So he's does a really nice job. And as I said, you know, at the end of that interview, he's all over this Kirk Minahan stuff. And that, you know, that's interesting news for anyone that listens to EEI or anyone that likes him or dislikes him. You know, it's definitely interesting news. So he's all over that. And I think you heard him say, he got the article out before they even announced it. So he was all over it. So let's get into just our one segment and then we'll get you guys out of here. We have our up high, down low, too slow. And I'll be honest with you, we found it difficult to come up with the up high guys here.
Oh, for sure.
Difficult to trim it to only five for down low. Up high, number one has got to be Jason McCourty. He's been on the wrong side of this list a few times, but he was targeted five times, only gave up one completion on Sunday. And so he was one of those kind of bright spots from the secondary. There weren't many of them, but he was one of the bright spots of the secondary.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he's had some tough weeks, definitely been inconsistent, but so is the whole defense. But I thought he looked good, you know. If you take away, which we'll get to, it's tough to put him on the down low. You know, the Gilmore-Davis matchup, if you could kind of limit that, they're probably in that game. Right. That was kind of really where they got beat offensively, especially early in the game. But, yeah, I thought he played well. Moving on to our next guy, up high, James Devlin. First carry since 2014, went for the only touchdown of the game for the Pats. You know, I'm a big Devlin guy. I think a lot of the stuff he does kind of goes unnoticed. Great blocker. You know, Michelle commented on it early in the year when he's having a success of how much easier he's made his job. And, you know, you appreciate guys like that. Who, you know, they know their role. They're not looking for carries. They, you know, he's just a true Patriot. And it was good to see him get some celebration time in there with the guys.
Oh, yeah. And it was a big boy celebration because Devlin scores the touchdown and he gives it to Andrews and Andrews spikes it. And I'm like, oh man, this makes the old school football guys like Bill Parcells, makes them all tingly. So it's interesting you mentioned Michelle because Michelle is the next guy on the up high list. He didn't play great. He did not play well. I mean, let's be clear here. The Patriots did not run the ball very often either. So it's not 100% his fault. The only called 19 run plays. Now, again, they were down for some of the game, but they didn't run consistently. However, just seeing him back out there was nice. And he did have some of that, a little bit of that explosiveness. He didn't look quite as good as he did, you know, earlier on before he got hurt. But, again, just him being out there, I think, was important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we talked about a little bit with Gasper last week that, you know, we kind of expected them to kind of ease their way into it, especially with the bye coming up. So it's good to get his feet wet again. It's been a couple weeks, you know, give him this. I'm sure he's a little banged up, you know, whether it is the knee or just the body, just from playing again. Give him the week off and, you know, once after the bye week, you know, get back into stride and keep doing what he's doing.
Right. Yep. Next on the list is Patriots fans in Nashville. Let me tell you, man.
You can
I
attest
felt like
for
I was
that,
in
Pat.
Boston.
You can attest
I felt
to
like
that.
I was in Boston all week. It was crazy. Everywhere I went, Patriots fans. Everywhere.
My
they
buddy
Patriots
lived down
jerseys,
there.
Patriots shirts. It was nuts.
My buddy lived down there, went to, you know, he's texting me all week and he's like, dude, and he's a New York fan and moved down there for work after he graduated. And he's like, dude, I could move millions of miles away and I can't get away from Boston. And I cannot stand it because he's a huge New York fan. I'm like, well, yep. We're one of a kind, man.
Yeah, it was nuts. Now, I will tell you the experience I had in stadium, probably the worst in stadium experience I've ever had at a game. And not a lot of it. I mean, clearly it was a terrible game, but the people in my section, which were all Patriots fans, there was one group of people that had 93 tickets. They had all bought tickets in the same section, and they just didn't care at all about the game. They were talking. They were up and down. They were laughing. It was like nonstop. It was driving me nuts. So I'm up there screaming at the team and yelling at, you know, Brady because he's playing terrible and, you know, yelling at McDaniels and Belichick. And everyone's looking at me like, this guy's crazy. And I'm like, why are you – we're getting killed by the Titans. Like, you're not upset about this? And people are like, eh. It was driving me nuts. So that was the one thing. In stadium, not great. But I'll tell you what, man. Nashville was like Boston South. It was crazy. So you know, good on that. I'll tell you what. We went out to the bar after the game. And I'm sitting at the bar. It was Jason Aldean's bar, which is kind of funny. I'm like, oh, it's just like Toby.
Oh, King. That's but pretty anyway, cool.
Yeah, they had the sweet little roof deck. I feel like all of these places have roof decks. But it was a sweet little roof deck. And it was all Boston people. Like everywhere I looked was all Boston fans. It was wild. I was like, oh my God, this entire bar. It's like a bar in Boston. It was nuts. So, yeah. So they were everywhere this weekend. So, and then the last one here is outside of Dwayne Allen. No one got hurt. Dwayne Allen is irrelevant. So whatever.
Yeah. I think it was Rich commented, you know, they don't throw him the ball much. So if it is significant, I know they said no surgery, but maybe a couple weeks. They might just throw Lee Adrian Waddle in there or Matt Tolden, someone that can, you know, get outside and block, because that's all really he did. So it's not like, you know, it's a major piece in their offense. But he does do the little things, like I said, the blocking. Sometimes he goes unnoticed too, but definitely replaceable, at least for a couple weeks.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, I think for me personally, you look at it and just say, you know, when you get embarrassed like that in a game, you just want no one to really get seriously hurt. And that's – they walked away without anyone getting seriously hurt. And so that's got to be a plus. And like I said, we just – we don't have many. So that's the last one.
Yeah.
Down low, I mean, geez, where do I start? I'm going to start with Pat Chung. He missed multiple easy tackles in the open field. You know, was a step slow on a few plays. He didn't look good. He did not look good.
No.
Ran on. It was
the whole secondary, man. It looked like I said, it looked like they had already checked into their suites for the bye week. They just looked disinterested, especially on defense. Down low, next guy, Dwayne Allen. I know we talked about him. Pretty useless in the passing game. Allowed 3 hurries and 14 snaps in offense. Doesn't catch the ball. Overpaid. But, you know, if he can block, great. But if that's all he's doing right now, you know, be good at it at least. And they couldn't get the run game going, obviously, because Michelle was on a snap count and they were playing from behind right from the get-go. So, I mean, it was tough. But, yeah, and I'll let you take the next down low, and I can kind of touch upon the next one because it might shock some people.
Mm-hmm. This one is Josh McDaniels. Let me tell you something about Josh McDaniels. That may have been the worst game plan I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
It was embarrassing. And
go ahead. Here it comes. Here comes the rant.
Here comes the Titans. The Titans had, going into last week, statistically the worst cornerback in the NFL. Malcolm Butler was statistically the worst corner in the NFL. He was on the field for 51 out of 66 snaps. 51 of the 66 snaps, they target his receiver twice, two times. You test the worst corner in the NFL two times? What are you doing? I understand he was covering Hogan, and good job, honestly, by Vrabel to say, okay, screw it. We're going to put him on Hogan because I know you're not going to throw to Hogan anyways. But you have to look at that and say, okay, let's make an adjustment here. Let's now throw the ball to Hogan since Butler's covering him. Hogan beat him multiple times, and Brady would never even look at him. Now, maybe that's on Brady, and maybe that's on the offensive line for not giving him enough time. So, great. Then McDaniels goes to the other side and says, okay, our number one read on this play is now Hogan because he's being covered by Butler, and we think he can beat Butler, and so we're going to challenge Butler. Instead of continuing to throw the ball to flipping Josh Gordon when he's covered by Adoree Jackson, and Adoree Jackson had a great game and covered him extremely well. The long pass he caught, he's been covered by a linebacker. I think it was in cover two, so the linebacker was following him. It was just like it just didn't work. It didn't work, and for them to not have looked at it and for them to not have changed the game plan, it was embarrassing. And, you know, there was a point, I'm not sure what the score was, but they came out, they got James White in first down. They throw the ball incomplete on first down. Then they take White out. They bring in Michelle and Devlin. And I'm like, oh, here comes a run for 1 yard. They run 1 yard, third and nine. Devlin and Michelle come out. James White goes back in. I'm like, oh, here comes a pass. He's sacked. It was just like, what are we doing? Like, everyone knows what's going on. I could tell you what play they're running. If I could tell you what play they're running, then you damn well know that the other team can tell what play they're running. So it was just, it's frustrating. I'm fed up with the way McDaniels has been coordinating. I know Chad was talking about it earlier, about he's a good go-between Belichick and Brady, and I'm sure he is. But some of his play calling has just been brutal. And so,
I agree with you, Pat.
But, man, it was brutal.
Yeah, I mean, you touched upon all of it. I don't even want to get into it. We can kind of go to the next guy, which might be a little shocking. Down low, Tom Brady. Read a stat today. He is ranked last in the league, 59.7 passer rating under the blitz this season, which is absolutely unheard of, especially of a player of his caliber and how well he's been able to read a defense and just looks out of sync everything. And it kind of just goes down the totem pole. Is him and Bill on the same page? Are they talking? Is Brady disinterested? Can he go to, if he went to OTAs, would he be this bad? I mean, he's got one touchdown pass in the last three games, and the only one was, looked like it should have went to Julian Edelman. And he overthrew him, and Josh Gordon happened to be there and ran into the house. So something's wrong there. And he's throwing knuckleballs downfield. He doesn't look like Tom Brady. And I hope, you know, the comeback kid will prove everyone wrong. He'll prove me wrong. I'm not getting on him. But after a game like that, you know, it's just been, he just wasn't good. I mean, the offensive line sucked. It was terrible. He was getting blitzed all game long. I don't blame him. If you're that bad under pressure, why not pressure him?
Right. Well, I agree with you. And that's one of those things, man. He's been awful. He's been terrible. And you know, you go back to it and you kind of fall into these same traps. And I feel like not in 07, but certainly in 09, I feel like he had Randy Mossitis, and he was just throwing to Moss. Didn't matter if he was open, he was just throwing to him. And so I think that was a real issue for him, and he's fallen back into that. I mean, he threw 27 passes to wide receivers. 24 of them were to Edelman and Gordon. They each had 12 targets. So that means he had three passes total to Dorsett and Hogan. That's not enough. Hogan was on the field for 54 snaps and got zero targets. And again, this comes back to McDaniels. You're going to play Hogan 54 snaps and not even throwing the ball. Just don't even put him on the field. Put Dorsett on the field. If you don't want Hogan out there, fine. But if you think Hogan can make a difference, then maybe Brady's the reason he's not getting the ball. And so you have to sit Brady down and be like, dude, what are you doing? I get it. I understand. You think Gordon and Elmy are two best receivers, and they probably are. But Hogan's getting the third best corner on the team. You got to trust that he can beat that guy. And he has trusted him in the past. So I don't know why he's not trusting him all of a sudden. So that one, to me, it is strange. Now, maybe he gets Gronk back and he's different. I don't know. But he was really bad on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree.
And the last, No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that was it. Go ahead. I already touched
Okay.
upon Brady. So.
So down last download is special teams, just the special teams in general. The game starts off with a long kick return. They had a long punt return. The special teams have been terrible. They're down near the bottom of the league in kick return and punt return coverage. Kick coverage at 31st in the league. Punt cover, I'm sorry, punt coverage at 31st in the league. Kick coverage at 29th in the league. So you just can't do that. And Belichick is better than that. His teams are always good on special teams, and this team has been putrid on special, not just bad. They've been terrible on special teams. And that's something that, is really not indicative of what they've done. They just brought in that guy, Ramon, I think, Ramon Humbar. He played with the Saints. He's a special teams guy. They
Yeah, he
just
was
bringing
with
in
the
special teams
Bills,
guys
I
now.
think, as of recent, and was with the Pats in
Right.
2016, I think.
Oh, you're right. You know what? You're right. He was. I think he's bounced around. He was with the Saints for a while. So he's a guy that is a special teams guy. So maybe they're just saying, okay, we got to get some of these special teams guys out of here because they're not doing the job. And so let's bring in some guys that will do what they're supposed to do on special teams. And so, we'll see what happens. But man, that's just, it's not great. And I also thought, too, special teams wise, Belichick at the end of the first half had a shot to kick a long field goal with Gostkowski and decided not to. And I didn't get it. I just didn't understand it. I know you're down 14, but you had a better, and it was like a 59-yard kick. You had a better shot at kicking the field goal than you did at throwing a touchdown on the last play of the game. It just it did, on the last play of the half didn't make any sense to me. So that was a, that's more of a decision thing, but it involves special teams. So I was surprised.
Yeah, and a
So.
lot of it too, like Cordarrelle Patterson's been decent at times, but the return game hasn't been great. I think I question him sometimes. Takes the ball out of the end zone sometimes, can't get past 25.
Right.
They didn't have Slater, so that hurt them. And I noticed Chris Hogan got a couple special team snaps and he looked terrible, looked so out of place. Actually on the opening kickoff, I think he got his ankles broke or something. It just looked terrible. Ended up being a big gain, obviously, just to start off the game, and then got burnt on a punt. So I mean, missing Slater back there hurts him. But yeah, it was bad top to bottom, and they got to figure it out because Bill always says special teams is a big part of football, and not a lot of teams understand that. And the Patriots are usually very good on that, and they haven't been too consistent really in any three phases of the game. But special teams too, they deserve to be knocked out a little bit.
No, for sure, for sure. Then our two slow this week is Stephon Gilmore. I mean, we talked about it, man. He got smoked all day by Corey Davis. Davis had a huge game. He had a touchdown. I think it was 7 for 125. Now, not all of that was against Gilmore, but the general point is there. Gilmore was a step slow on pretty much every throw to Davis.
Yeah.
On the touchdown catch, he tackled him. Davis still caught the ball. He was rough, and he had looked like an elite corner the last few weeks. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he did not look like an elite corner on Sunday. And so,
No.
I don't know. No, maybe it's a Corey Davis matchup. I'm not sure. Davis
They
played
did
against
say
Patriots.
he might have been a little sick, like you said. A little bit
Right.
of illness,
Right.
sniffling a little bit in the locker room. I mean, no excuse, but he's been
No,
great,
but
so I mean, we'll give him a
right.
pass
And
this
so
week,
that's
but he didn't play well.
exactly. That's why he's not on my down low. That's why he's on my too slow. That's why he's on a too slow instead of the down low. You know what I mean? But
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a Corey Davis thing. Corey Davis played the Patriots and had two touchdowns in the playoffs. Now he's had one or two big games, but not he really has done nothing outside of the game in the playoffs last year and this game. He had one huge game earlier in the season. Beyond that, he's had like three big games in his career, and two of them have been against the Patriots. So it's a little weird that that's. It just kind of popped up that way, but who knows? It might just be a fluke, but it just seemed like a strange kind of matchup situation there.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's it. That's all we got. As we said, man, next week it's gonna be a huge week. Big thanks to Chad Finn for coming on. Chad, great writer, really fun to talk to, and we had some really interesting conversations about it. Especially when we're just trying to avoid. It was nice. We're trying to avoid, the game, and I was like, oh, this is perfect. Chad wrote this really sweet article, and so we can talk about it. So it worked out. But we have an interesting show next week. We have a little just to, we won't tell you who it is, but we have a little book review. We'll be talking with the author of a book next week. And so so that should be an interesting one. So make sure you tune in next Friday. But we appreciate you guys listening. And Spags, as always, my man, appreciate you, man. And I'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. And Patty, I'll talk to you soon.
I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain, or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission, or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.